When you think about legal stuff, it all seems kind of like set in stone, right?
Yeah, you think so?
But things in the legal world change all the time,
All the time.
even during something like arbitration.
Right.
So today we're doing a deep dive into arbitrator disclosures.
Fascinating topic.
If you've gone the route of arbitration for a case and you've got your neutral arbitrator,
Right.
what happens when things change during the case?
Yeah, that's where things get really interesting.
And we've got some excerpts from a blog post
Okay.
that are going to help us unpack this.
Looking forward to it.
And I think it has some pretty big implications for anyone who's involved in these kinds of cases.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's really interesting about this whole thing with disclosures is that it's not just a one-time thing at the beginning.
Right.
You know, you don't just disclose potential conflicts at the very start and then you're good to go.
Right.
It's an ongoing responsibility for the arbitrator
Okay.
throughout the entire arbitration process.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, things evolve, right?
Yeah.
Relationships change, new information comes to light,
All right.
you know, things get complicated.
Okay. So for someone who's listening who maybe isn't super familiar with arbitration,
Sure.
let's set the scene.
Yeah.
We're talking about a way to settle disputes outside of a traditional courtroom
Right.
using this neutral third party, the arbitrator.
Exactly.
What are some examples of things that an arbitrator would need to disclose?
Okay, well, let's say we've got our arbitrator, we'll call him Arbitrator Smith.
Okay.
Arbitrator Smith is already working on two cases with Party A, and then all of a sudden he gets appointed to a third case, and guess what?
What?
Party A is involved in that one too.
Oh, wow.
So now we've got a potential conflict of interest,
Yeah,
right?
let's see what you're saying.
Could Smith be subconsciously biased towards Party A because they've been involved in multiple cases together?
That raises a big question for me, though.
Yeah.
Does simply knowing someone, even working on multiple cases with them,
Right.
automatically equal bias?
Well, not necessarily,
Okay.
but that's exactly why these disclosures are so important.
Got it.
It's all about transparency.
Okay.
So in this scenario that we've created, Arbitrator Smith is obligated to disclose this new case with Party A to everyone involved in those first two cases.
Wow.
And indeed, they have to tell the parties in this new case about the two existing cases with Party A.
Everyone needs to know what's going on.
Everyone needs to have all the information.
Yeah, it's not about assuming that something shady is happening.
Right.
It's just about giving everyone the information they need to decide if they're comfortable moving forward.
Exactly. You said it perfectly. And it
Okay.
goes beyond just multiple cases with the same party.
Okay.
Let's say, for example, Arbitrator Smith ends up on a second panel with another arbitrator. We'll call her Arbitrator Doe.
Okay.
Now they've got a prior relationship, and that too could raise some questions.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, they might be more likely to agree with each other. So.
Maybe even subconsciously,
Yeah.
just because they've worked together before, you
Yeah,
know?
they have that shared experience.
Exactly. So in
Bruh.
this case, both Smith and Doe are obligated to disclose that shared experience to all the parties in their original cases.
It sounds like there's a lot of trust involved in this whole arbitration process.
Absolutely, yeah.
You're choosing this alternative to a traditional courtroom, and you're putting a lot of faith in this neutral third party.
Right, you really are.
So these ongoing disclosures seem really crucial for building and maintaining that trust.
Couldn't agree more.
They're making sure that everyone feels confident that the process is fair
Exactly.
and that the playing field is level.
Level playing field, that's the goal.
So we've got this ongoing duty to disclose.
Right.
Are there any specific rules or guidelines that
Yeah.
sort of govern this process?
Oh, there are. Yeah.
I know the blog post mentioned California specifically.
Yeah, California is kind of a leader in this area. They've got something called Standard 12 in their ethics standards for neutral arbitrators.
Wow, they have a whole standard for this.
They do. It's pretty comprehensive.
Okay.
And one part of that, Standard 12B1,
Okay.
requires potential arbitrators to disclose upfront if they're open to future work with any of the parties involved in a current case.
Hold on. So they have to say whether they'd be open to like getting hired or consulted by these people
Yeah, like
down the future.
Yep, that's right.
That's wild.
It is pretty interesting,
I
right?
mean, it's like they're trying to predict potential conflicts before they even arise.
Right, it's all about being proactive.
Okay, so what happens if an arbitrator says, yeah, I'd be open to working with this party in the future?
Well, that's where Standard 12B3 comes in.
Okay.
That part of the standard actually gives the parties the right to say, nope, not happening.
So they can just disqualify an arbitrator based on that.
They can, yeah.
Wow, California's really serious about this.
They are. It's like they're saying, we're not even going to entertain the possibility of future bias.
Exactly. It really emphasizes impartiality.
But what happens if an arbitrator initially says, no, I'm not open to future work with any of these parties, and then later on in the case, they change their mind?
Oh, that's a great question.
Does that throw a wrench in the whole thing?
It can definitely get a little complicated there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely gets complicated, but that new engagement doesn't automatically disqualify the arbitrator.
Okay.
But it absolutely has to be disclosed immediately.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not an automatic game over.
Right.
But it definitely raises some eyebrows.
Yeah, for sure.
And gives the other parties a chance to sort of rethink things.
Exactly.
I imagine there are probably rules in place for when something like that happens.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What kind of rules are we talking about?
Well, organizations like the American Arbitration Association, the AAA.
Okay.
They have specific rules about this. So even if there was an initial disclosure and everyone was okay with it,
right,
the parties still have a right to challenge the arbitrator based on new information.
So the idea is to try to keep things as fair and transparent as possible throughout the process.
Exactly, yeah.
This all makes me think about the ethical considerations involved here.
Mm-hmm.
I know the blog post mentioned a specific code of ethics.
Yeah, they highlighted the Code of Ethics for Arbitrators in Commercial Disputes,
okay,
which was created by the AAA and the American Bar Association.
Got it.
And this code really clearly outlines this whole ongoing duty of disclosure.
Okay, so it's not enough to just disclose potential conflicts at the very beginning.
Right.
It's about being vigilant and making sure that you're being transparent throughout the whole case.
Absolutely.
What does that look like in practice?
Well, the code actually states that an arbitrator has to disclose any relevant interests or relationships that might come up or are discovered at any point during the arbitration.
Wow.
And they have to do it as soon as possible.
So even if it's something seemingly insignificant, the arbitrator still has a responsibility to bring it to everyone's attention.
Yes. Transparency is paramount.
No matter how small, huh?
That's right.
Wow.
The code even goes so far as to say that after an arbitrator has accepted an appointment, they should try to avoid entering into any new business, professional, or even personal relationships that could potentially raise questions about their impartiality.
So it's almost like they're being told,
don't
even put yourself in a position where there could be a conflict.
Exactly. It's about avoiding even the appearance of a problem.
I see.
Unless, of course, they've fully disclosed all the relevant facts.
Right.
And every single party involved has given their consent for the arbitrator to continue.
So informed consent and open communication every step of the way.
Absolutely. That's the key.
We've got California's approach. We've got the AAA's rules. We've got this code of ethics.
Right.
It seems like they're all kind of pointing to this one big idea.
What's that?
Transparency.
Transparency. Yeah. Without a doubt.
Both the AAA and the California ethics standards really emphasize this transparency throughout the entire arbitration process.
Couldn't agree more.
It seems like California's really trying to get ahead of the game with these standards.
They are, yeah.
Are there any potential downsides to having such a stringent approach?
That's a good question.
Like, could it actually make it harder to find qualified arbitrators?
Yeah, that's a possibility.
Or even discourage people from choosing arbitration in the first place.
That's an interesting point.
You know, if they feel like the process is just too burdened by all these rules.
Those are all excellent questions.
Yes.
And it's true that some people argue these stringent requirements could create some challenges.
Yeah.
Like you said, finding arbitrators who can meet these standards.
Hmm.
While also having the expertise in certain areas.
Right, exactly.
That might become more difficult.
Yeah.
And there is a concern that it might deter some people from even choosing arbitration if they perceive the process as just being too burdensome or too complicated.
So it's a balancing act.
It is, yeah.
You're trying to ensure fairness and impartiality
while
also keeping the process accessible and efficient.
Absolutely. There's no easy answer.
Right.
And it's a debate that continues to evolve as arbitration becomes more and more popular.
Yeah, makes sense.
But ultimately, it's all about maintaining that balance, making sure that everyone feels confident in the process.
It's fascinating to see how these rules and these standards are really shaping the whole landscape of arbitration.
Absolutely. It's a constantly evolving area.
And for our listener out there who might be considering arbitration or who's already involved in a case, understanding these nuances can be really important.
Incredibly important.
It's about being informed and knowing your rights.
Couldn't agree more.
But let's bring it back to our listener's perspective for a moment.
Okay.
Imagine you're involved in an arbitration case. What kind of new information about your arbitrator would make you start to question their impartiality?
That's a really great question.
Yeah.
I think it's something that everyone involved in arbitration should really think about.
Yeah.
What are your personal thresholds, you know?
Right.
What would make you uncomfortable or start to raise red flags for you?
It's about being aware of your own expectations.
Exactly.
And knowing what level of transparency you need.
Yeah.
To really feel confident in the process.
Absolutely. And being willing to speak up if something doesn't feel right.
Yeah. It's like that old saying, trust but verify.
Right.
You're trusting the arbitrator to be neutral.
Yeah.
But you also have the right to, you know, make sure that everything is above board.
Exactly. And that's why understanding the rules of the game is so important.
Yeah.
It can be really empowering for anyone who's involved in arbitration.
So as we're wrapping up our deep dive on arbitrator disclosures today,
mm-hmm.
I'm left with this one final thought for our listener. We've talked about all the rules and the ethical considerations and the potential conflicts.
Right. We've covered a lot of ground.
But at the end of the day,
yeah,
it really comes down to this.
What's that?
What would make you question an arbitrator's impartiality?
Mm.
Like, what's your personal red flag?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a really thought-provoking question to end on.
Yeah.
It really highlights how important it is to really understand what's going on
mm-hmm.
and to participate in the arbitration process.
Right. It's not about blindly trusting the system.
Exactly.
It's about understanding your rights and what you can do
yeah.
if something doesn't feel right.
And advocating for your own sense of fairness, too.
Exactly.
It's your case, you know.
Yeah. And it's a good reminder that even though arbitration happens outside of a traditional courtroom.
Right.
It's still a dynamic process.
It is.
Things can change.
They do. All the time.
And being aware of those changes and how to respond to them is really crucial.
Couldn't agree more.
Well, that's all the time we have for our deep dive today.
Okay.
But the conversation doesn't have to end here.
That's right.
Keep those questions coming.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
keep exploring.
There's always more to learn.
That's the fun part.
It is.